Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, June 5th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Pullman police issue arrest warrant for father of two-year-old Pullman girl missing since Monday in apparent custody dispute. Hundreds of new laws go into effect tomorrow in Washington. And attorney for homeless files for injunction against city of Clarkston to stop enforcement of extremely limited camping rules under a new anti-camping ordinance in the city. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios at KRFP Moscow Pullman, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Pullman police have issued an arrest warrant for 21-year-old Aaron Aung of Moscow for alleged first-degree custodial interference. Police say Aung did not return his two-year-old daughter, Soraya Aung Harmon, to his mother in Pullman Monday for a scheduled custody exchange. They also say Aung has violated a parenting and custody plan Latah County District Court imposed on him. Someone reported a 21-year-old Washington State University graduate living in Seattle missing, and police believe the disappearance may be related to the case of the two-year-old toddler. Pullman police say Aaron Aung may be with former Pullman resident Nadia Cole of Seattle. Someone reported Cole missing to the Port of Seattle Police on Tuesday, May 28th. The Lewiston Tribune reported Aaron Aung and Soraya Aung Harmon were on a fishing trip to Montana. The mother of the toddler, Samara Harmon, told Spokane television station KREM, nobody informed her that her daughter and Aung were going to Montana. The FBI is working with the Pullman and Moscow Police Departments to locate Soraya. The Pullman Police Department is asking for anyone with information about the whereabouts of Soraya Aung Harmon to call them at 509-334-0802. That's 509-334-0802. An attorney for the Northwest Justice Project representing the nonprofit Elves for the Homeless and several homeless Clarkston residents has asked for a temporary restraining order against the city of Clarkston, preventing them from enforcing a new city ordinance that limits camping to Foster Park in the city between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. Attorney John Wolfe filed the motion on behalf of a group of homeless Clarkston residents, including Scott Darrington, Nancy Kasky, Tamara Apfelback, and John Park, all of whom say the city ordinance disproportionately impacts them because of their disabilities, which include cancer, a seizure disorder, a tumor, post-traumatic stress disorder, and depression. Violating the city's camping ordinance is punishable by up to 90 days in jail, a $1,000 fine, and a six-month exclusion order. The Lewiston Tribune reports in a motion Wolf filed Friday, he said the ordinance violates a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling, which says homeless people cannot be punished for sleeping outdoors if they have no other options. In a split decision, the U.S. Supreme Court let that ruling stay in effect in April. The motion includes statements from homeless people. John Park wrote in an affidavit, "It gets dark long before 9 p.m. in the wintertime. You need shelter long before that. It means you have to wait until 9 p.m. to set up a tent, which means you can't even get to sleep until 10 p.m. or later, assuming you don't have trouble sleeping. Then you have to wake up at 6 a.m. to break it all down again in the dark when it's freezing out." Spokane Mayor Lisa Brown has declared an opioid overdose emergency for the entire city, but focusing on the downtown intersection of 2nd and Division. Mayor Brown said first responders have long considered the 2nd and Division area a crisis point and noted it's a hotspot for overdose calls and drug users there openly smoke fentanyl and other narcotics. Brown says the emergency declaration will mean there will be additional patrols and and there will be more rides given to drug users who need to go to treatment centers or recovery facilities. The city will also ask for more Narcan, which people can carry and administer to people who are overdosing to save their lives. The Spokesman Review reports Fire Chief Julie Oberg said year-to-date overdose calls have increased 30% since last year. Hundreds of new laws go into effect tomorrow in Washington. Thursday is the first day of expanded freedom of law enforcement officers to chase and capture suspects, removing many of the restrictions state lawmakers put in place in 2021 in an attempt to reform violent police after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis the year before. Up until now, police could only go on a high-speed pursuit in Washington if they had reasonable suspicion someone had committed or was in the process of committing certain crimes, which include violent offenses, sex crimes, driving under the influence, or trying to escape arrest. The new law allows police to go on a high-speed pursuit if they have reasonable suspicion a person violated any law. The Washington State Standard reports Democrats had argued removing the restrictions on police would result in the killing and injuring of more bystanders and others during high-speed chases, which are risky. The legislature this year voted to remove the restrictions after the Secretary of State's office received enough signatures to put the removal of the restrictions on the November initiative ballot. Thursday marks the first day of a parental bill of rights law in Washington, which was also an initiative that the legislature decided to approve rather than let it go before voters in November. Under the new law, parents of K through 12 students will be allowed to easily review school materials and medical records and opt their children out of assignments which involve their sexual experiences or the family's religious beliefs. Some lawmakers, including Democrats, say the new Parents' Bill of Rights has limited effect, and many of its rules are already part of state law. LGBTQ groups and the American Civil Liberties Union of Washington says students, parents, and school districts will be harmed by the law and that it violates the state constitution. The Washington legislature also voted to allow a third citizen initiative to become law, prohibiting the state and local governments from imposing income taxes. Supporters gathered signatures for the initiative, even though Washington does not have an income tax and there were no plans to create one. Another new law this week makes it illegal for police to hogtie people they are placing under arrest. An Idaho Medicaid deputy administrator told an interim meeting of the Idaho Legislature's Joint Finance Appropriations Committee yesterday the Idaho Health Data Exchange did not sufficiently address state demands as of last month, and therefore the state's Medicaid division might not renew its contract with the nonprofit exchange when it expires at the end of this month. Deputy Administrator Sasha O'Connell, who was previously the Office of Performance Evaluation's principal evaluator when it looked into the activities of the Health Information Data Exchange, told lawmakers the exchange lacked formal oversight and had not yet met their goal of creating a comprehensive public health tracking system. O'Connell said if the state withdraws from the system, it could take away any potential it had in the future. The Idaho Press reports the state paid $24 million to the Idaho Health Data Exchange when it started and another $65 million to healthcare providers to integrate their health records into the exchange. The exchange filed for bankruptcy in 2022, and a bankruptcy court ordered the exchange to pay 25% of its debt. The exchange is still operating. O'Connell noted when the state first funded the exchange, it did not use the competitive bidding process. She said if the state decides to find a new vendor for the health data exchange, it should go through the Department of Administration's bid process. The Public Health Division of the Health and Welfare Department is also planning to disconnect from the immunization information database system. O'Connell told lawmakers, without a contract for the immunization database, the state will need to do additional work to gather public health tracking or releasing medicine. She said public health will need to make more phone calls and faxes to get records for infectious disease tracking. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
It's the first full week of contract negotiations for janitors who clean the buildings of some of the region's biggest employers. The janitors, represented by SEIU Local 49, work at places like the Oregon Health and Science University Hospital and the U.S. Bancorp Tower. Their current contract expires at the end of this month. Janitors were on the front lines during the COVID-19 pandemic, and the union says it wants to make sure the essential quality of their work is recognized. Another focus is the rising cost of living. Elena Jimenez, a janitor at Adidas, says the health benefits are helpful, but she hopes the new contract will lower the cost.
They can help us get our pace a little bit less than what we are paying right now because, you know, the cost of living is really hard right now.
The cost of living in Portland increased 22% between 2010 and 2020, with the cost of housing peaking 30% higher than the national average, according to a 2021 report. Last week, about 100 people rallied outside the Oregon Convention Center in Portland on Friday to show support for the janitors. Renato Quintero serves on the executive board of SEIU Local 49 and is a janitor at Intel. He wants the companies employing union workers to understand that retaining them benefits both the workers and their employers.
To offer good jobs with good benefits will be better for the retention of the workers instead of spend all the amount of resources looking for new people that don't go to stay there for a long time.
For the first time, bargaining for both SEIU Local 49 janitors and security officers is happening at the same time. Both contracts combined will affect nearly 2,000 workers. I'm Kathleen Shannon reporting for the Oregon News Service.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
As summer begins, Food Bank of Wyoming patrons will start seeing more local food options thanks to a new grant. The U.S. Department of Agriculture and the state this year awarded the Food Bank of Wyoming a local food purchasing agreement grant for the first time. The $500,000 grant helps the organization buy food from local producers and distribute it across the state via 150 brick-and-mortar pantries, 19 mobile pantries, and backpack programs that provide simple meals for kids. Food sourcing manager Odessa Oldham says she'll purchase local corn, oats, pancake mix, flour, wheat berries, and of course, beef.
We've been able to increase our beef by a little over 12,000 pounds, and we're just beginning, but I'm hoping to buy a heck of a lot more beef.
Oldham says she hopes to source more local fruits and vegetables too, but those make up only a small amount of Wyoming-grown produce. Food Bank of Wyoming has seen increased needs since the pandemic. It served nearly 45,000 patrons last year, a 9% increase from 2022. Before she started sourcing locally for the food bank in 2022, Oldham says most of its food came from Denver. Oldham, a rancher herself, hopes this grant will connect local producers with buyers to build a network that will outlive the grant's timeline.
It's an opportunity to not just sell your product to the food bank, but to open up to another market, a larger market of other individuals in the state that are looking to purchase locally.
Grant monies are available through July of next year, when Oldham says she plans to apply for another round. I'm Kathleen Shannon reporting for Wyoming News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it'll be mostly clear through Saturday with a low tonight of 43, highs 76 tomorrow, 82 on Friday, and 86 on Saturday, lows 51 Thursday night and 54 Friday night. 20% chance of showers after midnight Saturday night, and again all day on Sunday. Otherwise, mostly cloudy Saturday night, low 60, partly sunny on Sunday, high 81. Currently 65. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air. Plus, the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP. Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website, krfp.org. There's a drop-down box there that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option, and there's a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Coming up next, we have an edition of Red Eye Collective, and that'll be followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Lockdown Mosh Pits on 7:30 to 8:30, and music begins in earnest at 8:30 with Arlene hosting Grateful Dead Through the Decades. Also, we'll have our weekly musical, What's the Frequency, Kenneth, on at 10 p.m. So stay tuned for all that music, information, and entertainment throughout your evening here at KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.
KRFP, Moscow is the best in the USA.
Yeah.